Hey everyone, what's up and welcome back to the Artist Coaching Podcast with me, Joey Suki. Today you are going to listen to a brand new episode with guests of Disco Fries. These two guys from the US have been working together for as long as I've been in the industry, at least for as long as I can remember. They're a duo and they tell about how they work as a duo because they live in two different cities, pretty far away from each other. And they found a way to work together online, obviously, which works pretty well for them, to be honest. And they've been doing it successfully for over a couple of years now. We also covered topics like how they think about the future of their artist career, what they're doing to prepare for that future. And there's especially one thing about dividing the income and creating multiple sources of income, which is interesting to you guys. So have fun, enjoy listening to this one, and see you guys next time. Bye. Hey guys, what's up?
Hey man, how are you?
All good, we're finally here. Yeah. I think it took us about 4 to 5 times.
Yeah, it's easily been a month since we intended to do this originally.
We rotated between having to change it between all of us.
Exactly. If it wasn't you, it was me, and back and forth. So thanks for taking the time, guys. I appreciate it.
Of course.
Where are you guys located?
So I'm in Virginia, like outside of Washington, D.C., and Nick is up in Jersey, outside of New York.
Nice. And do you guys work remotely all the time, or...?
Yeah, we've been doing it probably, 5, 6 years now, at least. So we were kind of ready for COVID before COVID happened, where it forced everybody to work remote. We already had a pretty good system going.
And how do you guys work remotely? Like, what's the tactics? Do you use software or something?
Yeah, so the way that I always put it is, like, Nick and I have been working together for probably about 15 years now. And a good chunk of that time we spent together, or like living closer to each other. So we got very used to each other's workflows. We sort of know who's got a strength in what area, whatever. Like, we know what we excel at. And so now at this point, we don't even really need to be in the same room, because if it's like, I don't know, something drum related, I'm not going to bother. Nick's going to do a better job. I just send him the stems. He handles it. We work both out of Ableton. Nick also works in Logic. So we don't do a lot of like in real time collaboration anymore, which at first was a bit of a struggle, but now we're just kind of used to it. And honestly, it allows us to get twice as much done because we're not both focused on the same project at the same time. And what we find is if I hit a wall, like I'm stuck on something, I send it to him. He hasn't been listening to it for 2 hours already, and he has a fresh take on it, and he can give me a little advice, and then I'm, you know, it's easy to carry on from there.
So we always advocate for duos in this way, because it's like you have another set of ears to bounce stuff off of that can give you an objective opinion who hasn't heard it a bunch. But also somebody like Danny's amazing at sound design and I'm not. So it's easier for me to be like, yo, this is what I hear this sound being. Can you make that thing? And so whether that's production or there's a counterpart for management or there's just somebody who's there on the other side of what you're doing to kind of like balance out whatever weaknesses you might have, we always advocate for duos. So it could be a manager artist duo. It could be a traditional DJ duo like we have. Just somebody else in the equation that could be your counterpart is always awesome.
It's fun because the more time I spend in the music industry, the more I start to realize that being solo pretty sucks.
Oh, it's so much work. And like, I feel like that's when it really becomes a job. Like in the traditional sense, like there's aspects that you dread doing. And it's a definite benefit of having this, because there's very few things that need to get done between us where one of us, you know, one of us is always going to be excited about doing something. There's very few things where we're both like, oh shit, now we got to do this. So Nick really excels at all the business stuff, the marketing, Whereas I typically don't get as excited about that, but obviously it's a huge piece of the puzzle.
So
it's just, it helps. I don't know. There's something for everyone to do, and we're always excited to work.
And dance music, just on a fundamental level, not to sell you further on duos, but here I go. Just on a fundamental level of traveling and not traveling alone.
Oh, totally.
It's like we have plenty of friends who are solo artists and like yourself, and doing the tour thing by yourself is not the most fun all the time.
Not fun at all. Yeah. Listen, just for people who don't have a clue who they are listening to, you guys are Disco Fries. Where should they know you from?
So you might have heard some of our remixes. We've remixed everybody from Britney Spears to Katy Perry on down the list. Or you might have heard some of our original records, which have been supported by some guys like Tiesto and Steve Aoki and Calvin and all the big guys. Or you might have heard our production with Tiesto. So we worked on a bunch of records together a while back, and you might have caught our name there.
How long have you guys been in the industry? Because I remember, like, I've been in the industry for like, let's say 15 years.
Yeah.
And I think, I'm not sure, but I think you guys were in the industry at least when I started.
It was around the same time. So we I want to say we became aware of you like around the time you started releasing on Revealed, when that label really like was a big vehicle. It was a really big thing at the time. Like, I don't know, Nick, what was that? Like 2010, 2011?
Something like that.
A little later. We had been doing remixing, and we kind of built a name locally in the New York area, but also just around the U.S., and it wasn't until more like 2011, 2012 that we started signing to these bigger European labels like Spinnin, Musical Freedom, Armada, that our name sort of got on a larger scale.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I can imagine. It was, especially during that time, if you compare it with now, I was thinking about this last time, like the social media space was so different because back then, especially the time you mentioned that I started at Revealed, I still remember if either Revealed or Hardwell posted something about me, I instantly gained like 5,000 people.
Yeah, totally.
Right.
Right now, you should be lucky if that's 100, you know, like it's a completely different space.
Yeah. You really need to have someone like a Tiesto that like champions you over and over, like here's a post of us touring together, here's our upcoming record, here's like his solo record that you should be excited about. Once it gets to that level, it moves the needle. But if it's just like so and so played my record on their weekly DJ mix, I mean, like it helps depending on what level you're at currently, but it's not going to be like just skyrocket you to fame right away.
Exactly. And that's something, one of the reasons why I wanted to talk to you guys, because I noticed that the whole Twitch thing that you guys have going on. I'm super interested in the artists that evolved within the space of content, because I do believe that content has become super important. Some might even say more important than music these days. And I see that you guys are evolving with that as well. So I was just wondering about your take on the industry, like the music versus content, and how you guys try to work with that.
So yeah, I mean, just broadly, as far as like our music releases, we've kind of ramped that up because we've definitely over the years experimented with like, all right, we're gonna put out a record and wait and see what happens with that song, and then you know, in a few months we'll schedule the next release. And then there's other times where we've done like two releases on the same day and kind of tested that model. And so now it's more about like consistent volume. Like every month there's a release or a remix or something coming out. In December, actually, we did two releases back to back. We did one on Christmas and we did one on New Year's, and they both got crazy placements on playlists because nobody else releases on Christmas or New Year's. So that's one hack for artists out there.
But how do you feel like with the promotion? Because the one thing I get a lot from artists around me is that, yeah, if I should release every month or every 2 weeks or whatever, it's too short of a time for me to promote the song. How do you think about that?
I think it sort of depends. And one of the ways that we play it is we will often toggle between like radio or streaming leaning records and then club leaning records. The club records typically get better DJ support. They'll pop up in podcast DJ mixes. And then the radio or Spotify leaning ones get the support on like satellite radio or the big playlist, stuff like that. And then that can help. Even if you're releasing them a month apart, you're sort of hitting different parts of your audience.
Yeah.
And you can promote them in different ways.
Hmm.
I think right now, like, because the audience is so fragmented between, like, you spoke to, we're doing the Twitch thing. The audience that lives on Twitch is totally different than the audience that hears us on Spotify, which is totally different than the audience that hears us on Pandora. So in theory, we could drop a new record on Twitch simultaneously with a record on Pandora and Spotify, and they might never overlap.
Yeah, the markets are super segregated right now, like... Just because you have a record at radio doesn't mean anyone's hearing it on Apple Music, Spotify, whatever. Like it's really hard to bring your audience all together.
So is that how you think about it as well? Like you service the audience on those platforms with different types of content?
A bit, yeah. I mean, like just from like an Instagram perspective, like the way we post there is not the way we're going to post on, say, TikTok, where we don't have much of a following, but like you have to speak to those audiences in different ways. So I think that's super important. Our Twitch show is 2 hours long, and then it rolls into another show that I do with a panel, which is another hour. So we're doing like 3 hours long of streaming form, in a row. It's really long form, but you can't do that same type of thing elsewhere. It just lives there. And now we're like getting involved in Discord more and more because we're doing NFTs and whatnot. And like, then that's a whole audience that you have to speak to. And that's like very individualized one-on-one conversation versus it being like pre-planned post or long format show. It's a different thing.
Yeah. Where do you see the future going with content? Would you say it would evolve more towards the Discord, like the personal approach, the with the NFTs connected to it? Or would you say platforms like Instagram, TikTok will remain to be important as well?
So the way that I've been looking at it recently is you could almost break it out into, you're always going to have two fan bases. You're going to have like your active listeners and then your passive listeners. Passive listeners are going to be the ones that always put on the same playlist on Spotify when they go to the gym, and maybe they'll hear you there. Maybe they know your name, maybe they don't, but they might recognize your music and be like, oh yeah, I like that song, whatever. Versus the active listeners are the ones that are seeking you out, gonna buy a ticket to a show, whatever. Yeah. And I think the Discord communities are great places to build active listeners, active fans. So I think I sort of see it being that you're just going to continue growing those two lanes sort of, and radio, Spotify are predominantly going to be passive listeners with some of your active listeners. And then the other platforms like Discord, Twitch, those are going to be more dedicated, focused fans.
Yeah.
Like if I was an artist starting now, I would get hyper focused on building a Discord, because you could have a sustainable career with a few thousand people in Discord who love your shit. And that's a real way to start right now versus just going after like big broad numbers across other socials, again, that are fragmented. You can't speak to those people directly. You don't know what the conversion is going to be. So if you have 50,000 fans on Instagram, you might only convert a really small portion of that into people who are actually going to spend money and support you.
I do believe that's the way that we go, you know, like focus more on the quality of your audience, spend more time on your audience. So give back to the community as well and spend time in the community, talking to them, getting to know them, those type of things, over like the masses. So talking to the hundreds of thousands of people that follow you on Instagram, but no one really cares.
Right.
Which are like the passive listeners, as you call them. How are you building your Discord right now?
So we got involved with a platform called Record Shop a few months ago, started doing NFTs through there, and they have a really active Discord. So we have a channel in there called Fried Fam, and it's just people kind of like dedicated to, you know, being into art collectibles on Record Shop, but also just broadly being into our music. So a bunch of those guys have been supporting what we do and spilling over into our Discord, which currently needs a mod. If anybody out there wants to come mod our Discord. But yeah, that's kind of how we've started to build, at least via Record Shop.
Yeah.
I think that's the other thing. When Nick was saying, like, you know, try to build your Discord, you don't necessarily need to build your own community. You can just be a very active participant in someone else's community and start to build a name there. So I feel like this happens every few years. You get these little like cliques of artists that are all tight together and kind of come up together. And if you seek out like one of these smaller communities, Dr. Fresh was a guest on our Twitch stream last week, and we got turned on to his Discord. He has a cool thing going there with like production channel that all of these up and coming artists are talking about. I can totally see in 5 years, they're going to be touring together. Like, and people are going to be like, oh, I wish I could be tight with a group like that. Like, there's hundreds of those groups going on right now that are bubbling up that are easy to get in and just start sharing your music, giving, you know, thoughts on other people's tracks that they're looking for, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. True. I'm a big fan of that as well. I do think that, as I said, the quality of the Discords, and if you build a Discord and focus on the people who are in there and spend time to them as well, like maybe do live streams there or take them into the journey of your song or whatever, I think that will be where the real growth is in the future from now on, which is completely different from where we came from, which was we need to get as many followers and likes as possible.
Right, exactly.
It's a different mindset.
And like and blog articles and like traditional press and stuff. Like when we started, that was the focus. But it's hyper shifted. But I think it's positive, right? Like we get a direct touch point with fans, and we can say to them, "Hey, what do you want to see? Do you want to see us do more airdrops or DJ mixes? Do you want to see more records like this?" And like we can get feedback kind of on what we're doing in real time, if you want that as an artist, or at a minimum, you just talk to your fans directly, which is super dope.
Yeah, exactly. Have you guys ever considered building a DAO?
We've been hearing more and more about it.
Yeah, I feel like we've got so many plates spinning already. It's not something we would rule out, but like, I hate starting something and then not like diving into it fully, and then it's just kind of like something that's neglected there. Yeah. But I think it's a cool concept for sure.
We used like the loose idea of a DAO recently. We did an activation called Participate to Create, where we had 250 people actually completed this challenge on Record Shop with our NFTs, and as a result, kind of as a reward for doing that, they got invited into like a private session with us where we collabed on a record together. So 250 people are getting like the co-production credit, but we kind of ran this thing like a DAO where they were able to vote for certain elements in the track, and you know, if we were going to use one vocal against another or a different lead line or a synth line, whatever, they were able to vote on those things kind of like a DAO. But the idea of building one full on, I don't know that there's like bandwidth right now.
Yeah, exactly. And who, how are you, like the content that you guys create, is that something you create yourself, or do you have a guy or girl who does that for you, or?
It depends. We've been trying to delegate stuff out more these days, just because we find it takes time away from like other more productive things we could be doing. Yeah. With that said, Nick still does, we run a record label, Liftoff Recordings. Nick still does all the artwork. I still do like the video assets. We're still pretty involved in a lot of that stuff, but I would recommend, and most artists sort of figure it out when they get to that point, the more you can delegate that stuff to team members, like it frees you up to do other things that people can't do for you.
Yeah. It's also the classic thing with money to spend, you know, if you're beginning, you don't have the budget to pay someone to do it for you.
Right.
So you have
when to you're starting out, you got to do it all for sure.
Exactly.
Well, and the best part of doing it yourself is you learn what you want out of somebody once you are going to go hire them. You know what needs to be done. You know if it's getting done efficiently, and you kind of have a sense of like how it all works, and that never hurts. Even if you're not an expert on it, just knowing how Danny in the beginning was doing our accounting, like until we got a business manager.
Exactly.
Like we had eyes across every number that came in. So once we got a business manager, it was easy for us to say like, oh, he's fucking up here. Whatever. There's something going on here that needs to be looked at because we were across those numbers from the beginning.
Yeah. Right. You know every detail of the business.
Right.
Yeah. You also mentioned that you already did some sort of NFTs. What is it that you did by now?
So we've everything we've done so far is on the platform that Nick mentioned, Record Shop. And they have a model that's similar to NBA Top Shot, if people are familiar with that, where it's like kind of like trading cards, digital trading cards. So we've released a number of things on there, which are like some, I can't remember, they've mostly been like VIP edits of tracks that we own the rights to and could do that with. There's been some video content. And then most recently, this Participate to Create, where we did a choose your own adventure track creation.
Yeah.
We have a bunch more stuff planned with them. And it's been just a really cool community. And like, I think a interesting take on the like NFT craze, where it's not like just these one-off things. It's sort of like every piece that we mint is part of like a greater game or like world that they're building on the platform.
And where do you see the future of these NFTs? Because you hear a lot of different opinions, right? People who say it's a money grab, people say it's a scam or it's useless. Where do you see NFTs and artists in the future?
So I think it's just going to become synonymous with what goes out in the marketplace. The same way in the beginning, streaming was like this fringe thing. And then before you knew it, it was just kind of part of everyday life. You throw it on Alexa and it automatically streams, but nobody thought of it that way, you know, a while back. So I think NFTs will just become integrated into what we do from ticketing to, you know, like once Ticketmaster gets on the blockchain and they start NFTing everything, number one, it's going to take scalpers out of the game. But it's also going to give you access to things you might not have had before. So what we're working towards with Record Shop and just in the greater Web3 space is how to tie these things into what we're doing in live events or what we're doing with a virtual event or with merchandise and how to like tie it all together where set holders of our NFTs get these in real life benefits. So I think where it's headed in general. And it's definitely where we're trying to go with it.
Cool. And I think obviously there are a lot of like get rich quick scheme, like things going on, but it's the same as like, I don't know, when was the first Bitcoin like boom, like 5-6 years ago? And everyone was like, this is just some like dump a bunch of money in and you think you're going to, you know, you're investing back 10 times over. And like, it crashed and then it came back up. But like, obviously in the grand scheme of things, like, it's clearly moving more in that direction where like people are realizing, oh, at least this part of the technology is useful for this. It might not be like the way it was initially presented, but if you look at NFTs from that perspective, like there's clearly something valuable there, whether or not it's being used like in a productive or like the best way right now, debatable, but like clearly there's a future there. I that's the way I feel about it anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's just, if you look at the rapid growth of NFTs in the past year and how quick it evolved, how quick it developed, like all the extra options that got to it, I think it's only getting started, you know. I think we will be amazed about the options and the new options it will bring in life. If it's in the music industry or entertainment or whatever. I think it has a lot of things to offer.
Definitely. Yeah, just from a collectible perspective, like with what we're doing with Record Shop, I think what's cool about it is now an artist can number one, document every stage of the process. So you're documenting maybe a studio tutorial, how you made the record, all the stems of the record itself, different alternate versions, remixes, whatever. And each one of those is a collectible potentially in a set where they all tie together. You're able to monetize all of them. So from a consumer perspective, it's dope because you're getting all these assets you probably wouldn't have had access to before in one place, and it's yours, you own it. But then as the artist, it's dope because when other time in history have you been able to like literally monetize the process of making a record?
Sure.
Previously, it was just like, we made the record, cool, let's hope it wins and works. Yeah. But it's just the final product at that point. Now you have like the whole, every step of the way where you're able to kind of like get a piece of the action.
And you're not relying on some like, I don't know, you don't have to wait for a studio come in and be like, I want to produce a documentary about your album. Like you can cater to your small Discord community. You're not relying on any sort of like distribution. You can do it almost direct with them. And it's really, it's giving more power to the artists and cutting out like the gatekeepers, middlemen.
Exactly. Keep more for your own, like in keep your own rights and stuff. That's important. Totally. And when with the NFTs you mentioned, like, do those people who own the NFTs also own part of the rights? So do they get royalties paid?
So right now, the way Record Shop works is they're not giving rights. It's different than Royal with what Blau's doing and selling like fractional shares of royalties. But I think that's what's dope about the Web3 space as a whole is you can, like Bored Ape is a fully open IP. Anybody can do anything with a Bored Ape if you own that asset. You can go write a book, you can make a movie. And then like CryptoPunks, you can't do that. And it's a little more limited. But I think what's dope is like, as an artist, I can say, all right, you guys are great. You could write books about us, but you can't make movies because we're going to make movies. Yeah. And like, you could spell all that out on the blockchain. And it's very clear up front with what a holder has access to and what they're allowed to do and not allowed to do.
Yeah.
Cool. I mean, otherwise, I mean, in a traditional Web2 sense, the paperwork around that would be insane.
Yeah, exactly. That's what really helps in the Web3. Sorry. I have one question left, I think. Yeah. If you think about the future of being an artist, because especially by the end of, well, halfway through COVID, I'm not sure if you guys know, but I coach artists now. I stopped DJing and production for like 6 years, 8 years maybe. And every artist that I spoke to was kind of depressed halfway through because they said like, where is this going? You know, where's the future of my career going? Am I still able to make a living from this? Am I still able to do the shows, which makes me the most happy? How do you look at the future right now, knowing kind of that we can expect that COVID is getting to an end? Where do you see the future of your career?
Well, I think it has been an interesting past couple of years. We, being apart from each other, we had kind of shifted away from live shows as our focus. Part of that is also we're in our like mid to soon to be later 30s. And like, we don't have the same. We're not like Tiesto who can just like play a show in a different city every night in his like 40s and he's totally fine. We don't have that kind of energy. So I think like, yes, it's still important to go out and do the live shows. There is something about connecting with fans in real life. And there is an energy there that's not really replicated on an online platform. Mm-hmm. But I think for us as artists, we're just trying to diversify and do as many different things as we can on this like online space or at home, whether it's building out our label, focusing on our production artist brand. We have our service finishmytrack.com, which is basically mix, master, and additional production in addition to just like general feedback, like try to help artists that get stuck at that 75-80% point and don't know how to finish it. So it's just building out all these different avenues where, you know, 10 years, 20 years down the line, we're still able to make a living off of music that isn't reliant on touring.
I think that's one of the biggest takeaways that you can get from COVID. You know, before COVID, being an artist, you kind of relied on one, two, maybe two things. And if I look at what most artists think about these days is diversifying. So whether it's NFTs or a label or a Discord or whatever you come up with to monetize as well, diversifying is a good idea always.
Definitely.
And there's like a famous, I don't know, there's a video that's gone viral a million times about basically it's a setup of markers, right? And each marker represents a stream of revenue. So first they just set up two markers and they put a board on top. They kick out one marker and the board falls, obviously. The next video, they set up like 10 markers, each representing a stream of revenue. And they put the board on top and they kick out like four of them. The board doesn't fall. They kick out another one. The board doesn't fall. So it's like that mentality that we have now where it's like, all right, you might make a few thousand bucks doing this type of production, sound design, whatever, do some syncs over here, do some publishing, and each one of those markers, if one's kicked out, we're good.
Yeah, exactly. So it's good visualization.
But for artists on the come up, I think that's important to start early and start figuring out what those markers are going to be.
I also want to point out, too, that those different, like, lanes, those different, like, markers that you set up might not generate any money right off the bat, and that's okay. You know, we started doing the Twitch streams, and we're not making any money off of the actual streams. We're not like Twitch partners that have giant audiences, but it's still something that we do weekly that's helped build our label community, build the website, you know, traffic to the website and stuff. So I think it's really important to diversify just across the board, whether it makes you money or not. You never know what opportunities are going to come up just by being involved.
Yeah, it's a good tip, guys. Listen, I'm gonna stop taking time for you away. You can go now.
get back to work.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks for your time, guys, and for the insights of your life and the way how you think about building your career. I think it's definitely valuable for artists to hear this.
Great. Thanks for taking the time.
We got to get you on our live stream whenever you're ready.
Sure.
That's actually live, so we can't do reschedules.
No worries. I will be there. Thanks, awesome. Guys.
Hey, everyone. Me again, Joey Suki. Hope you really enjoyed listening to this podcast episode with Disco Fries. As a friendly reminder, we with Artist Coaching have a Discord server where we have a 300 plus community with artists from all over the world talking to each other, giving demo feedback to each other. It's a nice place to be and a nice place to get to know new people from the music industry from all over the world. So if you aren't a member of that Discord yet, make sure to head over to our website and join the Discord. See you there. Bye.